Welcome to CoCurious, where sacred learning and financial traditions come to be reinvented so that wisdom and money don't compete. My name is David McLean, and we're powered by learningadvisory.com. A perennial frustration for higher education institutions is the paradox of accreditation. Many find frustration in the inertia within that quality assurance system, which manifests as a system that works far slower than reality. Dr. Rob Stegman, head of academics at Boston City Campus, this is your wheelhouse. What are your perspectives?
Thanks, David. As you said, there's a necessity for having a quality council that ensures that higher education institutions are doing what they promised to deliver. That's to deliver quality education that will ultimately benefit students and society. So the whole point of the system is to ensure that graduates enter into society ready to take on the jobs for which they've been trained and equipped. We need to ensure that that's done consistently across the board. The complexities around that are significant. And as you've pointed out, some of the challenges around a quality council like the Council on Higher Education, whose mandate it is to ensure that private and public institutions are offering quality higher education options for students and are maintaining systems to support that, means that that system is often very slow, frustratingly so, especially in context of accreditation. At a state level, very little funding is being allocated. So the Council on Higher Education is fairly small, and yet they're mandated with this task of trying to manage an entire higher education space that includes the publics and the privates. And so there is going to be these bottlenecks. Those bottlenecks make sense in the context of scarce resources. Your point also highlights whether or not the Council on Higher Education is also beginning to entertain possibilities around better use of technology to actually enable better levels of efficiency. And if I'm honest, I think there's a level of ambivalence myself around whether it ultimately achieves what it sets out to achieve. I recognize that I am part of that system and I contribute to that system. And in many ways, I support that system, but I'm also at odds with it. Your framing of it, faculty who are thinking beyond just the usual, beyond the conventional, find the space to be a tricky one to navigate. So innovation might on the surface or maybe even on paper be something that's touted as significant and important and relevant. The system is about standardization and it is about accountability. So the CAG is accountable for its mandate and it then holds institutions accountable as well.
If you were Minister of Higher Education and one of your key parts of your mandate was to address the current inertia in the accreditation system, what would you focus on to unseat this inertia so that South African higher education quality assurance and accreditation of curricula could be sped up to maintain pace with a world that is just getting quicker and quicker and quicker?
If we take the resourcing out of the equation, there is indications at this point in time that the Council on Higher Education are trying to make things more streamlined. So there is evidence of that. There's a movement in that direction, but it's also a movement towards an even greater sense of complexity. So they're trying to encourage and take note of differentiation and acknowledge that not every institution should look the same. Well, the minute you go down that road, you're making this a much more complex conversation. And so the question around whether or not there's an immediate solution is also a question around whether we want education to be about taking students in and then moving them through the system and graduating them as quick as we possibly can, giving them the necessary skills that they require, and that's where it ends, versus asking the question, is any of this ultimately in service of learning? And I think for me, that's where the difficulty is. And that's why I don't think there are easy answers to this. Because if I start pursuing the line of thought that I'm going with now, I'm advocating for something that's slower, not faster. I'm asking a different set of questions around, should higher education be something that everybody has to participate in? Again, there's a narrative that plays out in our space that says success looks like completing matric, going to university, doing a bachelor's degree, getting the degree, and going to find a job. It isn't looking at alternatives as viable options, because that's the story of success that we're selling. It's also, incidentally, the story that we as higher education institutions have bought and are perpetuating for good reason. Why? Because we've got a vested interest in ensuring that that system continues to pursue that particular goal. So I think if we had to start unraveling some of this in terms of what is the ultimate purpose of higher education, I would suggest that we come up with something that's quite specific to higher education. But that's not the be-all and end-all. It's not the only narrative that should be playing out within the space. That's where we're maybe missing a significant sort of part of the conversation. A single narrative isn't going to solve the problem. We're going to need multiple narratives to actually address what we need. It's going to take quite some time to undo the dominance of this particular narrative that sells higher education as the solution. It is a solution, but it is not the solution. In its current form as a solution, certainly things can be done better. Things could be done in a fashion that actually tries to get at the heart of what quality is all about. It's very difficult to define quality. And again, it comes back to the standardization of all of that to ensure if I'm measuring a UCT against Stadio, I need to have the same measure. But the question also is whether or not that same measure is in fact in place, and whether there's something else operational within the higher education context that sees institutions differently and applies different sets of rules across the board.
When we're impatient and we want this rash or pain to go away, we can be rash to protect our immediate needs and preferences. Ours could be private higher education, our specific institution, higher education as an ecosystem, and so on. Can you give us also some insight into the pending self-accreditation of institutions? Who will qualify for that, and what is the timeline of that becoming active?
Where the CHE is at present is that they're in the process of implementing a new quality assurance framework. And that framework imagines the possibilities around self-approval. And there's an interesting distinction to make here. Institutions have maybe grabbed hold of the idea of self-accreditation, when in fact the quality assurance framework of the CHE talks about self-approval and differentiates that from accreditation. So the council's mandate is to do the accreditation of qualifications. But it's trying to set up a framework for institutions, public and privates, to build robust quality assurance systems and for those to be evaluated and for the outcome of that evaluation to make a determination around whether or not the institution has all of the capacity and the mechanisms and structures to self-approve programs that they are wanting to offer. The Council on Higher Education will still play its role in accreditation, but accreditation would then take on a slightly different format. What that is an attempt to do is also to shift the focus to the institution and to ensure that institutions are building the systems that support quality rather than to nitpick at an individual qualification. Because currently, the system plays out as follows. We have the following sort of external quality assurance engagements that the CHE conducts. It's accreditation of programs. So it's program specific. So if an institution wants to offer a new program, they have to make an application. That application then gets evaluated by a peer evaluator. It goes through the system and gets accredited with or without conditions and meets certain criteria that are set at this point in time. The other external quality assurance engagement that the CHE conducts is institutional audits or reviews. This becomes the mechanism that the CHE uses to ask the question, using the institution as the lens of analysis, what's going on in the institution at a systems level, and are those systems mature so that we again, are assuring the public that what's going on in those spaces ultimately serves quality of provision. And what they're envisioning with the quality assurance framework is a situation in which higher education institutions take on the responsibility for quality more than looking to the CHE to tell them what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. But there has to then be a mechanism for making the judgment that an institution is in a place to be able to do that. So I think it is an attempt to try and simplify the system and not have it blocked up with trying to do multiple things, and that approval will then enable an institution to operate for a 5-7 year period without the sort of constant involvement of the CHE. There's merit in that. That's why this shift that's playing out at the moment is a significant one. The truth of the matter is we're still trying to figure it out. And what I mean by we is we as institutions. And I think the CHE is also sort of figuring out how this implementation will actually play out and what the implications of it might be downstream. It's an experiment. I think there are going to be some gains. What might potentially happen as well is that institutions that don't have the resources to play in the space, and by resources here, I mean not just financial resources, but the intellectual ability or capability to operate at a different level, are potentially going to be left behind. The truth is a lot of institutions would prefer to be told what to do, and then it becomes a compliance exercise, right? So if you tell me I need A, B, C, and D, I'll provide you with A, B, C, and D and be done with it. What's imagined in this quality assurance framework is a level of maturity that allows for greater sense of agency on the part of the institution. But with that becomes the greater sense of vulnerability, a figuring out, right? To trying to position oneself without somebody telling you what to do, when to do it, and how to do it.
It mirrors in many ways academic assessment, which relies largely on the assessment of student by expert faculty, with far less focus on the self-evaluation of the student. Because I've always believed that compliance doesn't denote excellence. I can have a driver's license. It doesn't mean that I'm a responsible driver. What one practical thing should a higher education provider be focusing on as we transition from a regulatory approval mindset and system to an increasingly self-approval mindset and system?
I think it's an orientation question. Even without the new quality assurance framework, there was a lost opportunity where institutions looked to the CHE, looked to the accreditation criteria, looked to the institutional audit frameworks, etc., as a way of trying to find out what I need to do and not as a point of orientation. So in the new quality assurance framework, that invitation to orientate oneself within the quality assurance discourse becomes the space of navigating towards quality in a way that moves away from compliance and towards a more generative, reflexive engagement that is always about positioning. So the thing that I think institutions ought to be doing is to be figuring out who they are in relation to what is already provided. How do I navigate within the space? How do I have a sense of where the boundaries are? And then to push against those boundaries as a way of trying to see whether there's possibility for boundary crossing that still nevertheless is in service of quality and in service of our students. One of the criteria for accreditation plays up the importance of having a program coordinator, a person. An example of pushing up against that as a marker would be to ask the question, is it about the person or is it about the function? So how might I as an institution conceptualize the function of program coordination as not being about a singular individual, but about being the things that constitute the coordination of a program. And now I'm in a new territory. Now I'm able to innovate beyond saying, yes, the person, we've identified them, Dr. So-and-so is the program coordinator, and their role is X, Y, and Z. But to conceptualize it, to reconceptualize it, but that requires us to have an orientation in relation to that which is in place in order for us to figure out where there are possibilities and where we may move beyond those possibilities. Because the other problem that I think we're having to navigate here is that even with the new quality assurance framework, it is a moment in time. It reflects an understanding of quality in a moment in time. It is locked in that moment because it's now codified as a framework that now sets the agenda going forward. But the problem is that we forget that it's set in a moment. And the moment's moving. So if we're not orientating ourselves in relation to that moment historically and then moving forward, we're going to continually pursue this sort of compliance mindset, which I think is actually anathema to quality. So it's figuring out that quality changes over time precisely because the spaces that we're occupying and navigating are also themselves changing over time, that our students are different from what they were imagined 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and that they will be different in 5 years' time because they're also the product of moments in time. So an orientation in relation to what is in place, which is why I think the quality assurance framework, it hints in this direction, but I think the problem is that institutions are going to want to just tell me what to do so that I feel secure in my identity, rather than figuring your identity out as an orientation to the space.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I'm going to write a piece for LinkedIn around orientation, and I'll use the metaphor of being dropped in the middle of the wilderness. Before you set off, if you're smart, you're going to orientate yourself, right? Whether there is a GPS or whether there isn't, you're still going to dial in your situational awareness. I think this conversation is going to be super helpful for so many people that are swimming through the marmalade of higher education regulation.
It's not something that's coming natural to us, which is also an oddity, right? Because I think we've been boxed into a space that's shaped us, socialized us to understand that in order to be in the space, there's certain things that have to be in place. It's this orientation to ask why, an orientation to find where you are, and to try and understand what lies behind it. I think in some ways, what the CHE is trying to do with these higher education practice standards, because it's using generative reflexivity as the mode of engagement, it's actually forcing institutions to locate themselves, which is exactly the point of orientation. Where am I in relation to this particular standard? Instead of me telling you what you need to do, you need to have a much deeper sense of who you are as an institution relative to the thing being discussed. So if I'm talking about a higher education practice standard on modes of provision, for example, the institution needs to have an understanding of the environment that they're busy creating for students, which is a point of orientation. It becomes a space within which learning plays out. But I'm asking now, what does that space do? I'm asking, how does that space shape individuals? What things am I contributing to make that space what it is? Instead of somebody telling me, in order for you to offer a program in a particular modality, you need to have X, Y, and Z. Now I'm asking a different question. It's driven by pedagogy. It's driven by my understanding of what learning is all about. That's the thing that drives it, rather than an external code or a set of criteria that need to be met. Why? Because I've now orientated myself. I think people are going to struggle with that because we've been socialized into patterns of behaving and thinking that don't even imagine that as a possibility. People want X, Y, and Z. They want the black and white. They don't want to even imagine that what was imagined was located in a moment, it can't be fixed in that moment, right? And I think that's where the challenge is. This work has to continue to be fluid. Otherwise, it becomes compliance